This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Urban planners, state highway departments, local city officials, and residents are holding a series of public meetings to discuss the design and construction of a potential eastern traffic corridor through Washington and Benton counties. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich attended a Springdale gathering yesterday, and she files this report.
John McClarty fiddles with a state highway department tripod, one of 12 holding large street maps on a public display in a conference room at the Jones Center in Springdale. He's transportation planner with the Northwest Arkansas Regional Planning Commission, here to meet the public and talk about improving the eastern driving corridor from Highway 16 in Fayetteville all the way up to Rogers Highway 62.
That corridor has actually been on long-range maps for decades. It's just such a kind of a common sense idea that you would take 265 in Fayetteville, Springdale, and just continue something like that, a corridor up into the eastern side of Rogers. And it's just, like I say, it's been discussed for literally years. And interestingly enough, the first road through the area back in the 1830s was on that corridor. It came down from Missouri, connected Springfield to Fort Smith. It was an old military road, probably before that an Indian trail. And it connected Springfield to Fort Smith and came through the Fayetteville area. That's why we're, in a sense you could say that's why we're here, because that road was here.
So imagine horseback riders and stagecoaches, carriages, Model Ts, and now hybrids, humming along old wire and old Missouri roads. And amazingly, a portion of that road remains unpaved.
There's parts of the old wire road that are through historic Cross Hollow, which is a Civil War site. And it would be problematic to put some kind of a four-lane improved road through there. So this study begins to look at alternatives.
This so-called Eastern North-South Corridor studies taking sensitive archaeological and historical sites into consideration, including a 10,000-troop Civil War troop encampment and the Trail of Tears at Cross Hollow, as well as ecological impacts, residential and business displacement, rather than blasting on through. That's what these public meetings are about. And along with looking at the past, the study's looking into the future.
We have a computer model that kind of shows what ifs. And just picture yourself as a traveler. You live on the east side of Fayetteville. Say you wanted to go to Beaver Lake or you wanted to go to Eureka Springs. And you start up 265 heading north. What do? You cut across to 71. Some people even cut all the way over to I-540 and go way up north and then come in 102, right? So we live on the east side of Fayetteville. We go way west, travel I-540, which is already congested, then come back on 102. So the question is, if there was something like 265 that just stayed on that eastern side of Fayetteville, Springdale, and went into Rogers, and your destination was Pea Ridge Park or Eureka Springs or the dam site, would you just stay on that east side?
Planners are also looking at crashes and safety issues to determine how many lanes will be needed in certain sections, and if sections ought to be limited access.
And that's where you put in the boulevards, you put in the divided medians that are green, like you'd see on Garland north of campus. And then you get a little controversy because that limits left turns. You can only turn left at certain intersections, but that's called access management.
And keeps traffic moving, attracts more drivers, thus reducing traffic on Highway I-540 and 71B. Imagine that. Improvements have taken place already. The city of Springdale reportedly has money dedicated to expanding sections of Old Missouri Road.
From Elkins up to Springdale, around the airport area, up to Randall-Wobey Road is either already four-lane or there's the immediate plans in the works to make that 4/5 lanes.
Plus, sections of 265 in Fayetteville are slated to be widened to help with the terrible bottlenecks there. An estimated 425,000 residents live in the two-county area.
I-540, you're running between 55,000 to 60,000 a day. 71 typically is around 30 to 35,000. And then the 265 down in Fayetteville Springdale is running around 18 to 20,000 a day.
But by 2030, our population could nearly double here. Projected VPD, or vehicles per day, indicate that more than 45,000 will want to commute the Eastern Corridor someday. At least that is the scenario before the Great Recession of 2008. 6 years ago, a Western Beltway, a new interstate-style outer drive that would have cinched Bella Vista's proposed bypass with Greenland's I-540 access ramp, was in the planning mix. The recession crushed that idea. So was an Eastern Parkway, basically a tree-lined limited access bypass up the Eastern Corridor. But that's not in the mix either. So now the Northwest Arkansas Planning Commission, the Arkansas Highway Commission, and State Highway and Transportation Department are back to square one with the pared-down Eastern North-South Corridor study. So what about the money? AHTD spokesperson Randy Ort.
Well, I mean, that's a million-dollar question right there. I can't speak for that. Congress right now is beginning to look at the newest highway reauthorization bill. Those are typically six-year bills. The last bill, Safe T. Lou, expired last year. And so we're currently operating on a series of continuing resolutions. So we are anxious to hear what Congress comes up with for a long-term funding bill. But until we have that, we don't really know how much money we're going to have to work with.
1 mile of highway costs an estimated $10 million to build, or more. The Eastern North-South Corridor study from Fayetteville to Rogers will be completed in 2 years. The Arkansas Highway Department, by the way, is conducting research in-house rather than using a consulting design firm, which is saving valuable tax dollars. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
A second meeting is scheduled for this afternoon, beginning at 4, at Rogers Heritage High School. That meeting is scheduled to last till 7 tonight. For more information, you can go to nwarpc.org, nwarpc.org. This is Ozarks at Large. Sunday, there will be a tribute concert and jam session honoring the memory of Wendy Austin. Austin, the charismatic leader of bands such as Zorro and the Blue Footballs and the Hot House Tomato Boys, died last weekend. Wendy Austin was nothing less than a musical tornado on stage. He could play several instruments, he could sing, and he could entertain a crowd like few others. If you lived around here in the 1970s or the early 1980s and took in a Zorro and the Blue Football show at the Swingin' Door or the Library Club, chances are you haven't forgotten that show. For all of the 10 years Zorro and the Blue Footballs played stages around the country, Mike Mone was in the band, playing next to Wendy Austin. This week I asked Mike, who now works for Tyson Foods, if he remembered the first time he met Wendy Austin.
Oh, I sure do. It was in 1971. I had just returned from the service, and a longtime friend of mine and a girl who was a neighbor and a family friend was taking me around to kind of reintroduce me to the music scene in Fayetteville, because my background was I had my first band in 1966, and then I had several bands in the 60s that were real popular around Northwest Arkansas. And she was taking me around to reintroduce me to the music scene after I'd been away for a couple of years in the service. And she took me over to hear a band called Rodeo practice. And, of course, Wendy Austin was the lead singer of that band, and a couple other people in the group that later became great friends, Steve Melody on drums and Billy Jett, who became a Zorro member later, on bass, and John Britton on guitar, and Wendy Austin. And Wendy was doing a lot of Creedence Clearwater in those days, and I remember the girl telling me, he can do this all night long. And, you know, that held true all through Wendy's musical career, because once you got him started on stage, he could definitely go all night long with the same exuberance and the same spirit and the same energy level.
You were with Zorro throughout the band's entire run, weren't you?
I was. I was working. Billy Jett, our bass player, and I were working for Stax Records in the early 70s in a group called River City. And Stax went bankrupt, and we all left. I remember we left Memphis after they let us know there wouldn't be any more recording sessions. And we came back to Fayetteville, and we got a call from Wendy. And Wendy said, hey, I've got a duo. We're calling ourselves Zorro, and we're gigging this week. Why don't you guys come down and play? And he also called a drummer, a local guy by the name of Jim Moon. So we showed up in October of 72 on, I'm sorry, October of 74 on Dixon Street at a club called Poor Richards, and with no rehearsal whatsoever, we started playing, and that was the very first night of Zorro, and then we added And the Blue Footballs featuring the Chuck Lunch Orchestra, because Wendy played clarinet and I played saxophone. But that was our first night, and, you know, the band never rehearsed. Everything we did was born on stage, and that's how our show grew.
I always got the feeling, watching Zorro and the Blue Footballs, that there wasn't such thing as a set list.
No, there wasn't. The audience dictated what we did. You know, we were great believers in catering to the audience's interests. And as you know, we got away with a lot on stage. In fact, we pushed the audience as far as we could. We thought that was an essential part of our comedy. And but I think we got away with that because we played good music. We always had the best musicians that we could find. And the lineup over the years included some really truly amazing musicians.
What was Wendy like as a band leader?
Oh, gosh. You know, Wendy was easygoing. He was serious about music and then not serious about music, you know. And by that, I mean he could be nonsensical. He and I, we kind of were joined at the hip. And, you know, we never said, you do this and I'll do that, and hopefully this is the reaction we got. We just played off each other, and we hit it off from the very beginning. And it was a real unique relationship in that band, because we never tried to upstage each other. We always worked as partners. And luckily, I'd like to say it was all by design, but luckily it worked, and the backing musicians that we had were all of such a caliber that they could follow our cues and play anything, kind of a musical interlude to go along with it. It was a fun band, and we never looked at it as work. It was always a great time. Every gig we played was fun.
He certainly had an irreverent sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned no rehearsals and no set list and playing with the audience. It would be easy, if you didn't know and had never seen Wendy play, that you'd think that he was always a joker about music. But he really, really loved music, didn't he?
He did, and, you know, he had no training. You know, I was in the high school band. I had musical training on saxophone, clarinet, and the woodwinds. And most of the players in our band had taken lessons or had a background in music. But Wendy just picked it up. You know, he picked up in rodeo. He became a vocalist with that band. And then later on, he acquired a clarinet. And he taught himself to play it. And, in fact, when he brought it to our first gig, I had to tell him what note he was playing. He had no earthly idea what note it was. He just knew it fit with the chord that was being played. But I used to tell him the note, and then he picked it up. But he became Wendy became quite a hell of a clarinet player, by the way, with no background at all. So, you know, once he put something in his mind, he was the same way with the piano. He learned piano, and he learned bass guitar, and then he taught himself drums. And, in fact, one of the last gigs he did while living was with Earl Cade and the traveling
Wheel Bearings,
yeah, the group that they put together just kind of as an exercise to get out and do something different from the bands they were playing with.
If someone is too young or didn't live here and didn't see a Zorro and the Blue Football show, how would you describe it to them?
Well, it was controlled insanity. Number one, the music was first. We always wanted to play the best music we could, and then we wanted the audience to leave feeling like they'd been entertained and they'd had a good time. You know, when we formed in the 70s, the U.S. was a real downer place. We were coming out of the Vietnam War. There were a lot of problems going on domestically, and there was disco music. So there wasn't any great music, and live music was starting to die a slow death. We actually credit disco music. We love disco because it put bucks in our pocket. We played a tremendous amount of gigs in the 70s because people were dying for live entertainment. And our goal when we got on stage was to entertain the audience, and we wanted them leaving with a feeling that they'd gotten their money's worth. And I guess, you know, we did something right, because I'm truly amazed after Wendy's passing, from all that I've read and all the postings and all the emails I've gotten, that people still remember 30 years later our skits. They can quote things we said. They remember instances on stage. So that's a real tribute, to what was going on.
What was Wendy like when he wasn't on stage?
Well, you know, Wendy was well-read. He loved to read. He loved to listen to music. He was a family kind of guy. He had a lovely wife, and he liked to do things that I think would have surprised a lot of people. He was athletic. He was a great football player in high school, and he liked to run. He liked to play tennis. He liked to play golf, and he read a lot of books. You know, when you're touring, when you're traveling on the road, you usually find a lot of readers in bands, because it gets real boring on the highway.
Someone told me the other day that the best Saturday in the world was you beat Texas at football and then you went to see a Zorro show.
You know, we always somehow, I don't know how he did it, maybe it's because the club owners in Fayetteville always wanted us around at the Texas game, but we always were booked into Fayetteville after that Texas game. And in fact, we've got an audio recording of one of those. And I'm going to try to get that distributed here in the next few months. But it was quite a show. And they were always packed houses, and as you know, they were rowdy.
That's an understatement. Yes. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for your time.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I'm just glad to be able to bring to mind people the attributes of Wendy, because he was truly a great performer, and he was a great performer and a great partner, and I loved him dearly.
Mike Mone played with Wendy Austin in Zorro and the Blue Footballs for the entire span of that band's existence. Wendy Austin died this past weekend. A memorial jam session and concert is scheduled for Sunday afternoon, beginning at 4 in the Garden at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. You can hear more from the conversation about the heyday of Zorro and the Blue Footballs with Mike Mone at our website, OzarksAtLarge.com. You can also hear full editions of Ozarks at Large. They're posted by mid-afternoon every day following this show. Support for Ozarks at Large comes from Collier Drugstores, offering a prescription refill hotline at 1-888-237-6261 and local delivery from 6 Collier's locations in Northwest Arkansas. More information available on the web at CollierDrug.com. And support also comes from the Center for Arkansas Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of the region's history and culture. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on the show, 2 Fayetteville residents are teaching people across the world how to use Facebook for their business. More about We Teach Facebook later on this edition of Ozarks at Large. Today, The keynote speaker for a gathering of Economics Arkansas is Bill Clinton. That speech is taking place in Springdale. We'll have a full report tomorrow. For today's show, a report that an Arkansas singer is hoping to show how the childhood of Bill Clinton helped shape the future president. She's putting together an opera that's a day in the life of the then 14-year-old Clinton growing up in Hot Springs. Michael Hiblin with KUAR in Little Rock has this story.
The opera is called Billy Blythe, which is the name Clinton went by until he adopted his stepfather's last name in high school. It's the brainchild of 30-year-old Bonnie Montgomery.
I was reading Bill Clinton's autobiography, My Life, and in the first few chapters of that book, he writes about his childhood and his youth. And just the way that he wrote about it was very evocative for me. I could see it on the stage in an operatic form.
Bill, pour a cup of coffee and then bring it here so you can visit.
It's still a work in progress, with Montgomery here in the role of Clinton's mother, Virginia, in a scene with her 14-year-old son.
My biggin's growing up so fast.
Montgomery has been slowly working on the project since 2006.
It's sort of these mythical characters in his childhood, very colorful characters and the flavor of the South and in particular Hot Springs. Just the way he describes his family and his community, all of the elements of opera are in his life, I think.
Montgomery is a native of Searcy, who graduated from Ouachita Baptist University in Arkadelphia, then attended the University of Missouri, Kansas City's Conservatory of Music. To put the opera together, she enlisted the help of Britt Barber, a former classmate at Ouachita who today lives in Atlanta.
I took the idea and I ran with it and went home and wrote the first scene and told her what I imagined it would sound like. And basically she put it down on the piano.
The play is set in Hot Springs in 1959 and includes Clinton's rather volatile home life with a fun-loving mother and a physically abusive stepfather. Barber says it was a pivotal time for the future president.
I'm hoping to portray Clinton becoming or realizing what he's capable of, who he is and who he can become at that very sensitive age. A person's life.
We're painting a snapshot of a day in the life of Billy Blythe. That's sort of the idea. It opens at dawn. It's going to close at night. And we have compressed events that happened during several years of his life into this one day in the most realistic way that we can.
There's at least one sonnet in there that's a pivotal moment where he's coming out from the movies having seen High Noon, and he begins to take into account his past and his father who died. And it really spells out his own sense of hope and inspiration.
But anything involving the former president faces scrutiny and can quickly become fodder for late-night comics. After a bit of national attention on the opera, this was Jimmy Fallon last week on NBC.
Check this out. A new opera based on the life of Bill Clinton is opening this fall in Arkansas. You're making your own jokes already. This is that job.
The joke isn't appropriate for me to finish here, but alludes to sex. Bonnie Montgomery says she's leery of this kind of attention.
Like you said, you mentioned Arkansas and you get a laugh. The same thing kind of happens with Clinton sometimes. But I want this, I just want it to be an uplifting and inspirational, positive story for Arkansas heritage and for the Clinton legacy and for opera, too.
Once I had a face.
The public will likely get its first taste of the opera in September when Montgomery is planning to perform a couple of scenes before a small audience. Then she hopes to bring it to a more formal venue.
Well, we're still in the final stages of composing it. 99% of the composition is done, but then it needs to, you know, get on paper in a way that's legible. for singers and musicians. And yeah, then we need to start talking about production and rounding up support.
The former president learned of Montgomery's project last fall.
I actually ran into Clinton in November downtown in Little Rock and told him about it. He said that in the end, the way that we said goodbye to each other was he said, "I support your project." I don't know if he knows exactly what it entails, but I was really encouraged by that.
In Little Rock, I'm Michael Hiplin.
One more note about President Clinton. His birthday is approaching. It's August 19th, and in honor of the event, admission to the Clinton Library will be free this Saturday. Rebecca Tennille, who works with the Clinton Foundation, says this is one of the few free days the library has each year.
The Clinton Center offers 4 free days a year, and they are in honor of the president's birthday, which is actually August 19th, but we move it to the 14th, so it's a Saturday, so people can enjoy it. Also, President's Day, the anniversary of the library opening is another day, and then the 4th of July is the last one.
Tennille says it's also a great opportunity for people to see the library's current exhibit that's on loan from the Field Museum in Chicago, Nature Unleashed, Earthquakes and Hurricanes. This is Ozarks at Large.
6 days of rioting in a Negro section of Los Angeles left behind scenes reminiscent of war-torn cities. More than 100 square blocks were decimated by fire and looters, and few buildings were left intact.
The Watts riots of 1965 began on this day. The large-scale, deadly rioting and looting broke out in the predominantly black Watts neighborhood of Los Angeles, California. The riots began when a Los Angeles police officer pulled over Marquette Frye because he suspected Marquette of drunk driving. Marquette was with his brother Ronald, and while officers questioned them, a crowd of onlookers began to form. When the boy's mother showed up, a struggle ensued, which led to the arrest of all 3 members of the Frye family. More officers arrived on the scene and hit the brothers with their batons. The crowd had grown by this point and had become angry. After the police left the scene, the crowd and tension escalated and sparked the riots, which lasted 6 days. The riots left more than 34 people dead, 1,000 wounded, and an estimated $50 to $100 million worth of property damage. It would stand as the most severe riot in Los Angeles history until the Los Angeles riots of 1992. After the Watts riots, then-Governor Pat Brown named John McCone to lead a commission to study the riots. The report issued by the commission concluded that the riots weren't the act of thugs, but rather symptomatic of much deeper problems, such as the high jobless rate in the inner city, poor housing, and bad schools. Although the problems were pointed out in the report, no great effort was made to address them or to rebuild what had been destroyed in the riots.
The entire section declared off limits to all but residents. The people who live here are suffering great hardship with no grocery, drug, or other service stores able to operate.
And now Jermaine Taylor with his shot. And a good left hook by Taylor. Both guys are making a mark in the first round.
Jermaine Bad Intentions Taylor was born in Little Rock on this day in 1978. Taylor began boxing at the age of 13 and has risen through the amateur and professional ranks to become one of the best boxers in the 21st century. He won a bronze medal in the 2000 Olympics and became the undisputed middleweight champion in 2005, holding that title for 2 years. Besides boxing, Taylor is actively involved in the Stamp Out Smoking Healthy Arkansas campaign and is part owner of a D1 sports training facility in Little Rock. Taylor has also spoken at several events regarding speech therapy for children who, like Taylor, suffer from speech impediments.
Don't worry about my Hulkamaniacs. They're survivors. They're ready. But you, macho man, I don't care where you stand. I don't
Professional
care
wrestler Hulk Hogan was also born on this date in 1953. The Augusta, Georgia native is a 12-time world heavyweight champion, 6-time WWF champion, and a 6-time WCW world heavyweight champion. Hogan was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2005. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The World Wrestling Federation champion. And what you gonna do, macho man, when the whole world full of Hulkamaniacs destroy you?
It is Wednesday, August 11th, 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin. She is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And of all the things I say, the one Kyle hates the most is quit listening to us and go now. But quit listening to us and go now to the Shiloh Museum in Springdale for a sandwiched-in program by Susan Young called Been a Busy Day.
Well, if it's something put together by Susan Young, it's going to get the good house seal.
You don't have to know anymore.
The good housekeeping seal of approval, yes.
But what you can know is that it's based on the diaries kept by a Madison County farmer named Milton Cooper from 1984 to early 1995. He was 70 years old when he began keeping a diary. Should be fascinating. It struck Susan that the long days of a farmer in any time frame in the Ozarks are rarely chronicled. And she was struck with how busy they were even into their 80s, raising chickens and hunting and fishing and gardening. And so you can go find all about it right now at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale. Bye.
And it doesn't cost anything.
Correct.
Becca Bacon-Martin is editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. Social media websites like Facebook are no longer just a way for students to interact with classmates when they're not in class. Several businesses are now signing up, logged in, and discovering new ways almost every day to increase their audience, all with just a few taps at the keyboard or the clicks of a mouse. And a new website created by two Fayetteville residents is offering tutorials for businesses new to the site. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has this story.
Facebook is a popular online social networking site that was created by a handful of college students. Now, two University of Arkansas graduates have created a website designed to help small businesses customize their Facebook page in order to better promote their business. Troy Gassner, co-founder of WeTeachFacebook.com, explains.
The information is scattered. I mean, virtually anyone, if they want to spend the time, can Google enough information. So that's really what we did. We went and found all these sources for all this information and found a place to compile it, and that's what we've done with We Teach Facebook.
If there's a certain question that a lot of people have, the colleagues often create a tutorial and post it on their site. However, the main service WeTeachFacebook.com offers is creating custom tabs for their customers. Gassner's co-worker Chance Chapman explains.
Right now, whenever you visit a Facebook page that doesn't use the custom tabs, you've got wall, info, photos, video, and then you can choose between events or reviews or discussion. Those are the ones that Facebook offers you. But the custom tab, you can leave a better impression on your customer. You can make that it's called the landing tab. So when someone visits your page and they're not a fan yet, you can have a colorful image that either advertises your business or your service. You could put a blurry image up that says, click the like button to become a fan and see this promotion. There's lots of things, and we can help with the creative side of those images, or if someone already has something in mind, we can take their idea and translate it into a custom tab.
Chapman had a successful experience with social media networking last year. In the fall, he maintained social networking sites for a local restaurant. His posts earned the business fans from around the world. One of his promotions for the restaurant garnered interest from local news outlets, which eventually led to his story being mentioned on CNN. In January of this year, Chapman and Gassner began discussing how they could create their own small business.
We really just decided to narrow down into Facebook, started the We Teach Facebook site and the page, and really just started to understand how many small businesses were out there that were looking for help starting a Facebook page. And so that's where we've really seen a need in the market. So we started offering custom tabs. Next to the photo and information section, you can basically build a mini website inside of Facebook. And we do custom page logos. We've done training with small businesses and really just found that they need a source to teach them how to do it.
To personalize a page, a user must sometimes use Facebook Markup Language, or FBML, which is similar to HTML. The UA grads are helping companies customize their Facebook pages because they say creating unique pages will help them stand out.
It gives your business an opportunity to stand out from the other pages. And so that's where a real opportunity is. You don't want people just to find your Facebook page. You want them to land on it and become engaged with it and learn about it there. So that's where a big opportunity is.
In July, Facebook officially reported having more than 500 million active users. This makes the site more appealing to small businesses because they have the opportunity to reach a large audience.
To compare it, the U.S. alone has 300 million in population, so it's like the U.S., Germany, and Japan all in one are within this network, and you can reach all of them. So that's the goal, is to help. Yeah, I mean, we can work with big businesses, but to help the small businesses take their product or idea or, you know, information that they're trying to share and teach them how to do it in the most cost-effective and time-efficient manner possible.
During the last 4 months, the We Teach Facebook co-creators have worked with people in about 100 countries. Chapman says one of the most interesting experiences he's had with the site is when he received worldwide feedback from one of his posts.
I posted, it's 12 a.m. Central Time here at Facebook headquarters in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Where are you at and what time is it? And it was really neat to see, you know, hey, I'm in Greece, or hey, I'm in Australia, I'm in Texarkana, I'm in Philly, and then they would post, you know, what time it was where they were at. So that was neat to put, you know, take my scenario, okay, I'm done for the day, this is what time I'm going to bed, what are you up to? And then they're in a whole different, you know, time frame.
The two colleagues say they can offer a variety of services, and their fees vary.
Our prices are listed on our website. We charge nominal fees for various custom fan page or custom tabs. We can do private training, and then we can also do, I mean, we can pretty much do anything related to a fan page, at a pretty reasonable fee.
Although they have worked with people around the globe, Gassner and Chapman say they are happy to help local businesses as well.
We do some local business, but a lot of the business has just been done via the internet, via our Facebook page, people finding the website and contacting us, and that's where a lot of the businesses come from. But, I mean, that being said, we'd like to help local businesses. I mean, we're a big fan of this Northwest Arkansas area, so any small businesses out there who would like to get involved and maximize their Facebook usage, we can definitely help with that.
More information is available by visiting weteachfacebook.com or facebook.com/weteachfb. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
That's just about all the time we have for this edition of Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, August 11th, 2010. KUAF would like to highlight the efforts of the Bella Vista Recycling Center, a community service project of AARP Chapter 109 of Bella Vista. Proceeds from the recycling center are used to help out various organizations, including KUAF Public Radio. For more information, bellavistarecycles.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Mountainburg, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 25 years. You can listen online at KUAF.com. And to hear this show again, or just portions of it, you can go to our website, OzarksAtLarge.com. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Thanks so much for tuning in. Have a great Wednesday.